Good morning. And I'd like to wish all the fathers and grandfathers a happy Father's Day, and all of you a joyous summer solstice on Tuesday. Last year, as my wife Jane and I watched Ellen DeGeneres' stand-up HBO special titled Here and Now, Modern Life and Other Inconveniences, in which she turned procrastination upside down and suggested that productive, can-do, conscientious, busy, driven people should stop procrastinating and allow themselves to slow down and enjoy life, it occurred to me that this idea could be the kernel of a booth service presentation. So I made this suggestion to the worship committee, and after procrastinating for a year, they invited me to be the speaker today. And I said I'd like to think it over, and they said, oh, come on, don't put off until tomorrow what can be put off till day after tomorrow. Mark Twain. The title soon came to mind, Spiritual Procrastination. And after asking Jane to help with research, I needed some definitions. So I Googled, and here are the number of listings I found. Spirituality, 163 million. Procrastination, 14,700,000. Spiritual procrastination, 1,980,000. Spiritual procrastination sermons, 1,330,000. The prospect of sorting through and digesting some of this vast ocean of information made it clear that I was going to have to put most of my energy into writing from the heart and doing a little bit of research. For spirituality, the definition I like best comes from Doug Mutter in his summer 2011 UU World article titled Before Words, The Spirituality of Humanism. Quote, spirituality is an awareness of the gap between what you can experience and what you can describe. I take this to mean that we can experience spirituality, but we really can't describe the experience, or at least not very well. Wikipedia suggests that spirituality can be used to refer to an inner path, enabling a person to discover the essence of their being, or the deepest values, meanings by which people live, and goes on to say that spiritual practices, including meditation, prayer, and contemplation, are intended to develop an individual's inner life, while spiritual experience includes that of connectedness with a larger reality, yielding more comprehensive self with other individuals or the human community, with nature, or the cosmos, or with the divine realm. For procrastination, I have settled on Wikipedia's definition. The modern term comes from the Latin word procrastinates, pro equals forward, crastinus equals of tomorrow. The combination results in forward to tomorrow. In psychology, procrastination refers to the act of replacing high-priority actions with tasks of low priority, and thus putting off important tasks to a later time. The psychological causes of procrastination vary, but generally surround issues of anxiety, low sense of self-worth, and self-defeating mentality. End quote. Spiritual procrastination. Although Google has 1,980,000 listings for spiritual procrastination, I could find no clear definition of the term. An effort to synthesize these definitions of spiritual and procrastination leads me to suggest that a person who is engaged in spiritual procrastination is one who, notwithstanding feeling an urgent need to pursue an inner path, enabling deeper discovery of the essence of their being, reluctantly postpones engaging in tasks and practices that would lead to greater spiritual growth. Since I'm going along with Ellen DeGeneres and turning the definition of procrastination upside down, I am not implying that you are burdened with issues of anxiety, low sense of self-worth, and a self-defeating mentality. But I am suggesting that although productive, can-do, conscientious, busy, driven people like you may not think of yourselves as procrastinators, I urge you, myself included, to try to stop procrastinating so much, to give up what may be your fear of slowing down, to relax and to allow yourselves more time to pursue your spiritual paths. With regard to spiritual procrastination sermons, it seems remarkable to me that Google lists 1,330,000 sites under this category. Surfing through some of these, I'm struck by the fact that while my message today urges you, the busy and active ones, to stop procrastinating, to give up what may be your fear of slowing down, to relax and allow yourselves more time to pursue your spiritual paths, it appears that many of these sermons were written during the last millennium by religious leaders who, while urging their followers to pursue spiritual paths, were using examples of procrastination from sacred scriptures to warn their followers of the danger of allowing themselves to be distracted by their mundane chores of daily life, where they were warned succumbing to such distractions would result in failure to achieve salvation. In other words, the religious leaders were using guilt to motivate their followers, while my message urges each of you to liberate yourselves. An example of a biblical reference used in a sermon to illustrate the danger of procrastinating comes from Luke 14:15-24, the parable of God's invitation to man to partake of his blessings. It shows that many will not partake of God's feast, some because they have bought a piece of ground, and another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. So with definitions in place, and after consulting with the musicians and the readers who are contributing today so much to this service through music and ideas that are intended to reflect and support the theme of this presentation, I'm now going to focus on how the message I am delivering to you today could perhaps be of some use to you in the future. Fear, perfection, guilt, plans, spiritual practices. I would imagine that we are all spiritual procrastinators to one degree or another. I know I am. Some of the material I have read in preparation for this talk leads me to believe that in some cases, the tendency to procrastinate arises from a person's fear. Fear of being judged negatively by others or by yourself for failing to achieve perfection. Judged on how well you perform or carry out a course of action, a journey, a task, or a project. This fear then impedes creativity and motivation, resulting in procrastination that leads to guilt for not having started and/or completed the course of action. If your course of action is to slow down so that you can relax, focus, and allow yourself more time to pursue your spiritual path, and if you are procrastinating, you should consider whether fear of being judged as a failure is a problem that you need to overcome. Whether you are stuck in this type of circumstance or not, I suggest it might be helpful for you to have a plan for pursuit of your spiritual path. I am well aware that many of you have been involved for years as spiritual seekers, but whether you have been at it a long time or are just setting out on a journey, I think now is always a good time to ask yourself whether you are finding the time you need to pursue the spiritual goals you've set for yourself. Consider creating a plan that includes spiritual practices. Here are 3 broad categories of spiritual practices to consider. Allow plenty of quiet, peaceful time to go inside yourself to discover the essence of your being or your deepest values. undertake spiritual practices, including meditation, prayer, and or contemplation, or yoga, or tai chi, or whatever suits you. Seek spiritual experience. Connect with a larger reality, people, like we're doing here, nature, the cosmos. With regard to relationships, spiritual teachers and mentors, consider seeking guidance from a spiritual teacher or a mentor while in pursuit of your path. But be careful and remember, to thine own self be true. By the way, that Hamlet said that. It's not from the Bible. That was a big point in my reading I took note of. Looking back over my life, I reflected on what is perhaps the most important pillar of my spiritual evolution. Although spiritual seekers need teachers and mentors to help them navigate their paths, in the final analysis, each person has the absolute right to decide for themselves which spiritual path to take, how to navigate it, and how to determine whether they've been successful in the quest. Here are some examples from my life of challenges and lessons learned along the way as I navigated my spiritual path. As a teenager, I wanted to understand the meaning and purpose of the universe and of life on earth. And through his books, Tolstoy was one of my spiritual mentors. And here are a couple quotes. There is only one time that is important, now. It is the most important time because it is the only time that we have any power. And if there is no higher reason, and there is none, then my own reason must be the supreme judge of my life. Other mentors were Thoreau and Emerson. As I began to develop these relationships with close relationships with some of my friends, I came to realize that relationships could be enhanced or diminished by the perspectives and belief held by the two people involved. In my first marriage, my wife and I were very compatible in terms of having much in common spiritually. We began to find our way along our spiritual paths through the books and recordings of our teachers and mentors. It was the 60s, and it was a great time for spiritual seekers. We brought two beautiful children into the world and shared our spiritual journey with them. 10 years later, we parted ways. When our paths went in different directions, I continued along mine and she along hers. A year later, while working at Stanford University Medical Center, I started dating and fell in love with a woman who had spent more time than I navigating her spiritual path. She was a follower of Alan Watts, a British philosopher, writer, and speaker who broadcast a weekly radio program at Pacifica Radio Station in Berkeley. He was a teacher of Zen Buddhism and wrote a best-selling book titled The Way of Zen. She was also a follower of Werner Erhard, who had studied Zen Buddhism with Alan Watts. Erhard founded Erhard Training Seminars, or EST. And some of you who are old enough, I'm sure, remember EST. Wikipedia reminds us that EST presented several concepts, most notably the concept of transformation and taking responsibility for one's life. The actual teaching, called the technology of transformation, emphasized the value of integrity. The seminars were all the rage in the early 70s. We spent a weekend attending one of them in a big hotel in San Francisco. After living together for a year, we found that our spiritual paths were not compatible, primarily because neither of us was willing to compromise our beliefs and values enough to accommodate the other. It was very sad. We gave it one last try by staying up all night talking it over, crying all the while, but we couldn't agree to go on any further along each other's paths. I'm not sure what I learned, but for the next 15 years I was single. And I kept hoping I'd find Miss Wright. And finally I met Jane in 1984, and although it took us a long time to get together, We fell in love, found that our spiritual paths were compatible enough to allow us to make the journey, and we were married by a UU minister in 1989, one day after my 50th birthday. We moved to Idaho because we share a deep love of the mountains and the high desert. Between us, we have 5 grandchildren, and we continue to find our way along the paths we navigate. As you can see, these experiences taught me that relationships can be enhanced or diminished by the spiritual perspectives and beliefs held by the two people involved. And if a powerful and influential teacher or mentor is added to the mix, compromise can be all the more difficult. So, each of us deserves one another's respect in terms of where we are spiritually at any given time, as expressed in the 7 Unitarian Universalist principles that UU congregations affirm and promote. And I'm not going to read all of them, but I would read a couple here. The inherent worth and dignity of every person, and a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. I believe these principles provide the framework for the respectful environment we have created, and therefore provide us with the support we need, each in our own way, to give up whatever fear we may have of slowing down, so we can give up waiting, as in Bill Pulley's reading of Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, and learn to stay, as in Steve Bushi's reading of Pema Chodron's Getting Unstuck, so we can live more in the present moment and love one another. Since I was inspired by Ellen DeGeneres to give this talk, I want to come full circle with her closing remarks from her HBO special titled Ellen DeGeneres, Here and Now, Modern Life and Other Inconveniences. Quote, "We're doing all these things to squeeze all these things together so we can save time. I don't know about you, but I don't have any more time. I have less time. And let's just say we could save up a whole chunk of time and set it aside. You know, what would you do with it? Nothing. Nothing at all. Isn't that the point? To be able to do nothing at all? But we're not guaranteed that later on chunk of time. All we have is here and now. And that's why procrastination feels so right. Procrastination is not the problem, it is the solution. It is the universe's way of saying, stop, slow down, you move too fast, listen to the music, because music makes the people come together. What I am trying to say is, if you leave here today and you don't remember anything else I've said, leave here and remember this, procrastinate now, don't put it off.